Welcome to the 53rd episode. The Vancouver Tech Podcast. My name is Drew O'Grizzick.
And I'm Alex Moxon. Hi.
Hey. So yeah, this is my question. Is it the 53rd? Because you know how people say like congratulations on your 16th birthday when you turn 16?
Mm-hmm.
Is the day you're born not considered a birthday? And so when you turn one, that actually be your second birthday?
Makes sense.
Does it? I don't know. What year is it? Is it the 21st century?
Oh, no. Right? It sounds like we're going down a rabbit hole right to begin with.
It sure does. So I always find that kind of interesting. I spent some time living in Korea. And for people who aren't familiar with the way that Korean ages work, they go by a little bit of a different thing. And you can hear all sorts of weird explanations. The explanation I found that seems to hold true as far as just be consistent and is easy to understand is exactly that. They go by the ith year. So when you're born, you're considered in your first year of life. So let's say you were born on December 31st. That day, you're in your first year of life. The next day is the next year. So you're in your second year of life. Huh. Rather than saying, you know, on the second day, the day after your birth, you're 2 years old. And I think if we just translate that to year of life, it kind of makes sense and holds true. Thoughts? Is it the 53rd episode?
I think it's the 53rd.
I think you're right. All right. So how was your week, Alex?
My week was good. It was really busy. I went to meetups every single day with the exception of yesterday, but I went to two meetups on Thursday.
Nice. So,
yeah. Busy week, lots of stuff going on. I finally went to my first more technical meetup, I guess. Mm-hmm. I guess actually that's not true because our Thursday meetup is very technical. It's mixed between business and then technical.
It's an interesting meetup. Maybe we can come back to that.
Yeah,
and
of course.
What technical means. That's actually something I wanted to talk about
today.
But I think you're absolutely right. Anyway, go ahead. So what were the meetups that you went to?
So on Monday, I went to the inaugural VanTech meetup, which was really awesome.
Mm-hmm. And you didn't think that was technical?
Well, no, it was. It
coding
was great.
Happened. Come on.
No, it was awesome. It was a great explanation of events. Events are always seen in event storming and all of that kind of stuff. And it was really well prepared. I was impressed. So
it was kind of neat, I think, because I guess Robert gets used to the crowd that comes to the DDD CQRS ES meetup.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of a high level, more advanced people who probably have years of actually implementing this stuff. And now they kind of want to get a more advanced sort of view on it.
Mm-hmm.
and kind of broaden their horizons and talk with other people. So it's kind of like a dojo of all black belts, you know. and I don't know, because I've never studied any martial art, so I don't know if that's a good analogy.
That surprises me.
Does it?
Yeah.
Why?
I guess because you lived over in Korea. I don't know.
That's... And Japan.
And Japan, yeah.
Yeah. But no, I didn't know Okinawa with Mr. Miyagi.
Fair enough.
A different story. Yeah, but it kind of seems like that. And then the turnout that we had was a lot of people, it was their first sort of taste at, you know, what is event sourcing. And mm-hmm. so that was really neat. And I think Robert was quite unexpectedly surprised, but in a good way. Mm-hmm. Pleasantly surprised, that's the word I was looking for. But yeah.
Cool. So did you want to hear about the rest of the meetup?
I sure did, yeah, sorry. I just wanted to talk a bit about that because it was our inaugural one and
yep.
It was really cool.
Yep.
And we'll see what happens for the next one. We had some interesting conversations after, so I think we have some good ideas.
Excellent. And that's going to be every 2 weeks, right? Or is that
schedule
still
we don't
being...
have a set schedule as such.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking kind of play it by ear because I want to get some cool topics, maybe bring some people from some of the different meetups. So like this was a really nice taste of what the ES practitioners meetup's all about. Now, you know, you could continue that conversation with that meetup.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe we can do something similar with other meetups, or Maybe we do blaze our own trails. We also talked a little bit about the, you know, the open collaboration project.
Awesome.
And whether we're going to be kickstarting that. And I think probably bringing people in from some of the meetups we'd like to collaborate with on that type of project would make a lot of sense. And I think another thing, Charles gave, I think, some really good advice that, I mean, it probably makes a lot of sense and a lot of people already know this. But I think it needs to be, you know, stated again and again until it sinks in, is that having an idea is a great thing. But actually, like, bringing that idea to the potential customer, getting the feedback, coming up with a demo. And a demo is also quite different from a prototype. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a working thing. But having this demo and having an idea of who your customers are, what the cost of acquisition per customer is going to be, and really doing that groundwork to get to funding is an interesting thing. Like, it's not necessarily something that you want to care about, you know, saying, I've got this idea that I want to build out for the sake of building the idea, maybe, or for the sake of having fun and learning. But if you think about, you know, what are all the steps that go into launching a business? Now, add the complication of together with the community, and it makes for a fun project. But I think that, like, getting feedback from people like Charles, or from people like Robert, or from people like you, or anybody actually that has something valuable to contribute, I think is a really interesting thing. And so I think we have a lot of great places we can go from here.
Awesome. Well, it sounds exciting, and I'm looking forward to see how everything progresses.
Me too.
Cool. So next meetup I went to was at Microsoft. That was pretty fun. It was the Azure meetup. It's very, very technical, smaller group, more presentation style. Brian Benz put that on.
Who's that?
He is a key person over at Microsoft. I think he's a lead developer, but I could be wrong. I didn't get his card or title. So hopefully we'll have him on the show at some point. He'll be traveling back, so that'll be pretty awesome. And then Wednesday, I went to the Vanue UX Awards, which was kind of fun. Packed. There's some really great design options and rewards and recipients, some really great ideas. So one of the ones that won twice that night was designed by students. So they won the overall design, and they won the best design by students, which was IKEA Stay. It was pretty cool. Really well thought out, nicely designed, nice interface. Yeah, there's some really awesome competitors.
Very cool.
Yeah. So that was fun. And then on Thursday, I went to the DDD CQRS ES meetup. I could only stay for about an hour, but it was an interesting group. It was a little bit of a departure from our normal setup, so it was more architectural-based.
Was this the first of the new series?
Well, actually, no, we haven't started that yet. So this was more of a side topic. So I think
what
a lot
was
of...
the topic?
Well, I didn't stay for all of it. But I'll loop back with Robert and just confirm, but he said it was a really interesting, I guess, architectural roundtable meetup with some very senior people that had really great ideas. So yeah, I definitely want to dig into that more. So the next meetup I went to was with PyLadies, and it was an intermediate Git tutorial.
What was that all about?
It was awesome. First of all, it was really, really well organized. It was held at Demonware. Pizza was provided, drinks were provided, not drinks, but soft drinks. And it was really well organized. There was a lot of practical applications, or a lot of time to practice what we were learning. And it was guided as well. The people that facilitated it were really approachable. It's all different types of levels of knowledge, from straight beginner to a little bit more advanced. So it was a really welcoming group, and I'll definitely go back to another one of their events.
Nice. So what sort of, what stuff did you actually touch upon? What were some of the things that was Git? So I'm not sure, actually. I know you've recently started on your journey of learning code. So I did want to talk a little bit about that at some time. But what's your Git level like? What's your knowledge of Git? I guess you had a takeaway from it. What was your takeaway?
So first of all, I'm pretty new to it. So it's my second repository that I was working with.
Okay.
Robert actually helped me work with Hello World, and we created some really cool stuff with that, and a Node application, which is kind of fun. Although I don't know if that's on Git. Anyway, so just getting comfortable with all of the Git commands and the command line. So opening up terminal, running it through bash, and going back over to, we actually used a visualizer. So I forget what it was called that I downloaded, but it's the one for Linux.
Yep.
And then just looking in GitHub to see what progress was happening in the instructor and facilitators GitHub account.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember, so I kind of sometimes wonder, like, is, like, Adam, for example, is he a good person to learn Git from? And I think it really depends on where you're at, you know, because I find with so many things, once they're obvious, they're really obvious. And so it's hard to kind of put yourself back into the shoes of not knowing. Mm-hmm. Now, I remember very well how glossy-eyed I was when I first started with, like, just version control and being like, what is this? And at the time, it was SVN. And I actually never really spent much time with SVN, so that, but that was my first sort of like, what is a version control? Mm-hmm. And then I quickly jumped into Git, thankfully, I think. but I remember just wondering what it was and being really confused. And I think like a lot of people having, you know, kind of GitHub and Git feel like a synonymous thing. Although now I realize they're quite different. One thing that really helped me, so I think I got to a fairly reasonable level with version control, and then I started working at ActiveState with Adam, and we went through a very interesting phase there. But this is something that I think really, really helped me with to kind of springboard my experience with Git. Was we had a pretty pretty interesting project set up, and it was based on an upstream open source project, Cloud Foundry. And the way that Cloud Foundry models their thing is, you can imagine it's a group of applications that work together. And so each of these applications has its own repository.
Okay.
But there's a higher level repository that you might think of as the main repository. And below that, there's a number of directories that are basically pointers to the other repositories. And so it's pointers to different commits. Mm-hmm. Or so whenever you change one of the other repositories, you might need to update that pointer. And these are called submodules anyway. And so this added a really interesting layer of complexity over things. So it did two things. One, we actually switched to using submodules from not. And one thing that that did was it gave us that sort of base level repository that it was, it kind of acted as really as a directory of all of the different apps that made up this this system. And I thought that was a really good thing, because now we got to see like, oh, okay, when we're building the system, it's actually this, not just some random group of repositories spewing across some place. So that was kind of cool. But on the other hand, it just added this complexity of anytime you make a change one place, you have to update all sorts of other places. And sometimes we'd have these things like recursive submodule sort of loops where we had an issue for a while where with our build system, and we had to build, and it would fail three times before it would finally work on the fourth time, because it was, you were kicking off a build and the submodule had to update its submodule and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, everybody in the shop went through breaking everything, like breaking builds and breaking production before we kind of finally all got it. And then we decided not to use submodules anymore. But it was a really fun learning curve. Anyway, so in your own words, what is Git?
What is Git? For me, it's a way to organize information and structure that information in a way that it's accessible, where you can make changes without having to change everything. So it's a way to kind of isolate a branch and be able to make changes to that branch without having to crash your whole system. So I think it's, fundamentally, it makes a lot of sense to me. It's just getting comfortable with the commands and the structure. It's almost like looking at something and it's not, realizing it's not just one thing, but it's a sum of 30 or 40 different branches. So I like the tree analogy. That makes a lot of sense to me. So if I can look at something and see the information tree of it, that, I don't know, just it, I get it. makes sense.
Very cool. Yeah, I really like, I like Git a lot, and I'm glad we get to use it. There's still a lot of things I think I don't use on my in my day-to-day that I probably could that would make things a lot nicer. But mm-hmm. yeah, a lot to learn. So that's another thing I wanted to talk about was how's your journey in programming going? What have you been learning? What's been going on? And I think another something that I wanted to bring up, which I think is a huge, huge, huge thing, a huge part of learning mm-hmm. Code especially, but probably it's probably helpful with everything, is troubleshooting.
Okay. Which we had, we experienced today.
Uh-huh. Well, a little bit. And that was actually something as well that I thought would be worth talking about. Mm-hmm. So what is troubleshooting? How do we troubleshoot? What are your approaches to troubleshooting? What have you, and that's one part of the question. And the other part is, so what have you learned this week in code?
So this week, primarily Git, and just opening up Terminal and getting used to different sudo commands and things like that. And I realized when I look back a year from now, I'm probably going to think, oh my God, I can't believe I said that. I sounded like such an idiot. But maybe not.
Maybe not, yeah.
I don't know. It's an interesting learning thing. I like things relatively well-defined, but I also like knowing, I like figuring out why something works. Mm-hmm. So... for me, it's not good enough for me to just have a basic understanding of something. I need to know at a level of depth why something is, mm-hmm. how it is. So I think I'm going to find coding, I don't know. I mean, it's so far I'm finding it a little simpler than I thought mm-hmm. it would be, which is great because it seems like, I mean, you think, oh, I guess from a non-technical perspective, you look at it. Sorry, I'm running out of the right words to say, but it seems like it's so much harder than it actually is. And when you actually get into it, you realize it's a language, it's a way, it's very well ordered and it's very logical. Maybe not all applications are like that, but that's what I'm experiencing so far. So there's a lot of different things I'll be learning. I'm going to be focusing on JavaScript, Node, and React. So far, I've learned Bash, I've explored Vim, I've explored Git and GitHub. SSH, I haven't had a lot of time to look at, but I have created an SSH key. I really want to focus on the architectural layer of things, so how things work together, not just learning a particular language, but how it all works together as a whole. Mm-hmm. That's something very important to me and kind of how I learn. I need to learn everything at a very surface level, very wide, and then I need to go very deep and understand how all of those pieces work together. It's a little bit of a different approach. Mm-hmm. Most people are either sort of that surface level or deep in a couple of silos, where I like knowing it all.
very interesting.
So I've a problem.
I've heard a lot of people say the exact same things. Mm-hmm. And I wonder why people think that most people are only looking at a surface level. Mm. And I think maybe that's a difference between people who learn to code and people who don't, perhaps.
Maybe.
But yeah, I think it's neat. I think we all have sort of an acceptable level of depth. Mm-hmm. That we get to a point where we're like, okay, now it makes sense. That's deep enough, mm-hmm. But not necessarily, which isn't necessarily, you know, how time and space work or how reality is or like how deep do you actually go.
I think that's funny. Don't get me started.
But there's a certain level where we start to hit our comfort zone and we're like, oh yeah, okay, now there's words I understand or there's things happening that I kind of get. But whether we dig further from there or not, I think it's kind of neat. So what that acceptable level is might be different from, you know, from person to person. Mm-hmm. But that sounds pretty cool.
Awesome.
So troubleshooting. Mm-hmm. What is some troubleshooting, or what is troubleshooting?
I think troubleshooting is looking at something and breaking it down into the sum of its parts, mm-hmm. And being able to do that quickly, which I think is learned over time. But also realizing that if it's an error, it's probably not the first thing that seems logical, and knowing to check different places. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, having a good level of understanding of a system definitely helps with troubleshooting. I think if you have that surface layer, it's going to be hard because you're not going to know all of the pieces that you could check. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think it just involves patience and just a general curiosity of figuring out why it's not working and trying different methods.
Yeah.
So again, kind of applying the scientific method to things. Mm-hmm. Trying something, having it fail, trying again, and really not getting discouraged in that process. Mm-hmm. And then eventually succeeding, hopefully.
Yeah. Sounds very reasonable. Something I've found, maybe from a more, maybe a less scientific approach almost, but something I've found that's helped me a lot in troubleshooting is a couple of things. One, thinking about, if I get stuck with something or if I feel like I'm stuck, thinking about who I'd ask. And then two parts to this. One would be thinking about if I asked that person to come over and help me, what they would do, and kind of reasoning through what they might do to help. The other thing is, coming up with or formulating questions that would reiterate through the steps that I took to get to where I was, that I could explain to them, to quickly catch them up to what I've done. Mm-hmm. Precisely. So when I put this in, I get this error message, which leads me to believe that this might be there or that, and kind of follow those steps, the steps that I took to get somewhere, and then what I'm actually getting out of that. And sometimes I'll go so far as to set up a message for someone and never actually send it. Have you heard of, I think it's called rubber duck debugging?
No.
So I can't think of who actually came up with this term, but I guess there was a programmer that used to have a rubber duck sitting next to them so that they could explain something to them. And this comes from, very often when you're troubleshooting something and you end up asking somebody for help and calling them over, as you're explaining the steps you took to get to where you are, mm-hmm. the answer or the solution is now revealed, and so you no longer need help from another person. And that's kind of that's the point of that. So I find that to be very, very helpful, and often I'll try, and I guess it depends, it's more of a personal preference, but I'll try to exhaust all possibilities that I can before asking somebody else for help. And I think that's for me, because I think the debugging process is a huge process of, it's maybe the main process of development. Mm-hmm.
Figuring out why something didn't work, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess it's time for meetups around town. So we have a pretty busy week coming up this week. I don't know, is there anything in particular this week that you're looking forward to?
I'm definitely going to be going out to the regular Thursday group for DDD CQRS ES. And I need to talk about to our group what we're going to be doing this week. I think we'll be kicking off a new topic, but don't quote me on that.
I am pretty excited about some of these meetups. For me, actually, the VanQ meetup is something that I think is really awesome. It's very well presented, and that's coming up this Thursday. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. I guess let's just start with Monday, the 21st.
So starting off the week, we've got GitHelp and Zero Tech at Decontrol from 4 p.m. to 6. Bring a laptop to this one, and it'll be pair programming, trying out different Git scenarios on your platform of choice.
Very cool. So I know you went to an intermediate sort of Git meetup mm-hmm. last week. Are you planning on going to this one and making some further steps with Git?
You know what? I probably should. For me, it's all about practice. Yeah. And as much time as I can practice something, the better.
Unlike every other person. I've never heard of people benefiting from practice.
Nope. Never, ever.
Yeah. So that's really cool. So are you fairly comfortable now with initializing a repository, making commits and branches?
No. So
very cool. Okay.
So then I need to spend more time with that.
Well, that sounds like a really good place to maybe start out with. Something that I would maybe after that, take a look at some of the differences between merging and rebasing.
Okay.
And I think really there's a lot to be known about Git, but I think for an everyday workflow as a developer, being able to branch, merge, rebase, push and pull, mm-hmm. I think those are pretty much like all you need to know relatively well. And then you're good to go.
Awesome.
Yeah, and maybe how to sort out merge conflicts.
Yes.
But I don't think that's a particularly big deal. Then from 5:30, we have also at Decontrol, which is 436 West Pender, we have Vancouver Rust. Mm-hmm. Are you planning to go out to that at all?
Well, I'll be there if I go to this meetup. Mm-hmm. So maybe I'll just pop over and see what's involved there. Yeah, it's really cool to see the sidewalk lights change. And from what I understand, it's run through a Raspberry Pi. So I'd like to dig into that and how those things work and those systems work.
Very cool. And you could maybe if you're not particularly interested in that, you could also probably just do some other REST stuff. Mm-hmm. But that does sound really awesome.
Yeah.
Then we have this other one. So this is over at Vancouver Hackspace, 104 1715 Cook Street. The meetup is full now, but it was they have a ongoing intro to programming through Python.
Yeah, it's the Python tutorial. And I think they're probably in what, their fifth or sixth week at this point?
Yeah, I was wondering. I'm not sure. I haven't been keeping count. I was going to say maybe eighth, but you're probably right. It's more like fifth, I think. Very cool. So it's ending on January 9th, and any changes will be communicated in advance, and it's weekly. So it's probably fourth or fifth, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it'll be interesting to see what they do next and when people can start signing up for that course.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the Polyglot Vancouver Reading Group. Mm-hmm. So this is happening at Stage 3 Systems, which is 220-750 Hamilton Street. Have you been by those offices?
I haven't.
Yeah, me neither. So it might be worth even just checking out for the space, but also the Reading Group. I haven't been to many Reading Groups, and I think it's because I've been really too lazy to read a lot of these papers, which I really probably should. It's category theory, functoriality, and functional types. Functoriality. What is functoriality?
Oh, good question. It almost looks like a made-up word, but maybe not.
Well, the funny thing is, I think all words are made-up words.
That's true. Very good point.
So functoriality, math, programming. Mm-hmm. Very cool. So that just, you know how earlier you were saying, like, that sounds like something that a year from now I'll look back on and say, wow, I sounded like an idiot? I think I just had one of those moments.
Well, good. It's nice to know I'm not alone.
Right. All right. So this is happening. It says, start at 6:10. Don't be late, with an exclamation point.
Yes.
The discussion lasts for about 1 to 1.5 hours, depending on the paper. That's pretty impressive. And I think this sounds like the type of thing that would be very much worth reading and attending. And then after, they adjourn for food and or drink at Steamworks.
Awesome. Sounds good. And one thing they do mention is to read the paper beforehand. So
yeah, absolutely.
That's a good thing to do.
Definitely. I think a must for something like this. If you're going to a reading group that's talking about a paper and you haven't read the paper, I don't know what that's an invitation for, but bad times.
Yeah.
So make sure to read the paper.
Next up, we've got the Vanlug Linux User Group General Tech Meeting. Mm-hmm. That's at SFU downtown. It says to see the board at the front door to confirm the room, but it's at 515 West Hastings.
Yep, and that's happening from 7 p.m. I don't know that you'd need to bring a laptop to this, because it does kind of look like a more detailed description of the event will be updated when they have confirmed the event and speakers, mm-hmm. which kind of sounds like, is it actually happening or not? Because this is happening on Monday.
On Monday, yeah.
And I don't see a more detailed event. It does also have a note that this is an automated scheduled meeting, which means there's a possibility the meeting will be scheduled on a holiday. Location, date, time may be altered in such case.
Okay.
And it doesn't sound like Monday's a holiday or anything. This might be something to go and check out, because I haven't been to this, and I do like Linux, and it's a general tech meeting, so it might be cool.
Awesome. Well, sounds fun.
Yeah, and it looks like that's our Monday. So you're planning on going to the GitHub,
mm-hmm.
And then maybe you'll be there for the Vancouver REST. I think I'd really like to go to that Polyglot Reading Group so that I can say functoriality, sorry, and not sound like a complete idiot.
Well, if I have time to read the paper, I might check that one out as well.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Well, we definitely have time to read the paper. It's just whether we make time.
That's true.
Specifically devoted to that.
Very true.
All right. And that's our Monday. Then we have Tuesday the 22nd.
Starting off with Open Coffee at Nelson the Seagull. Mm-hmm. That's Vancouver Pixel Crafters. Starts at 8 a.m. Definitely go by, talk about things.
Very cool. So yeah, that's at 8. Open Coffee sounds awesome. Bring a laptop, don't bring a laptop, up to you, and be ready to drink some coffee. We have the Tech Talent Meetup from 5 to 7. This mm-hmm. is over at 887 Great Northern Way. And this looks like it's going to be pretty cool. The topic is hacking security, so if you're interested in that, and I think that actually ties into something that I'm working on right now.
Mm-hmm.
So this week, one of the tasks I got assigned was to make sure that there's no kind of vulnerabilities SQL injection type thing in any of our endpoints. And although a lot of that stuff's baked into frameworks and things like that, actually coming up with some automated testing to make sure that at least a certain reasonable level, your endpoints are secure, isn't the worst idea. So I've been looking into this thing called SQL Map, actually, which is an open source project written in Python. And it's kind of interesting. It's actually really well documented, nice. Which is cool. And I find that I don't know if this is the same for everyone, and I kind of suspect that it is. There comes a point where you transition from preferring to read the manual or the help text from the command line of the app that you're using, rather than do a Google search, for example, or Stack Overflow or whatever. Mm-hmm. Because the documentation, once you're able to read it well, and it took me a long time to, there was a long period of me reading people's comments like RTFM and being like, yeah, but it's, I can't, and I didn't feel like I could read the manual. Mm-hmm. It's like, but it's so hard. I don't understand it. It's like a page of text to read.
Right.
And it says weird words that don't make sense, especially like Git, for example. It has some of the best, I think, some of the best help messages, but they don't make sense if you don't understand the words.
Right? Yes.
I mean, a lot of the time, until you're in that sort of mindset and until you have a reasonable level of familiarity with what it's doing, it just doesn't make sense. So, yeah.
Cool. Well, that sounds like a pretty awesome meetup to go to.
It absolutely does, yeah. And so let's come back to the next one there. We have happening at 6 p.m. So the Business Intelligence and Data Warehousing Networking Group. Mm-hmm. So this is, it looks like a social happening over at the St. Regis, 608 Dunsmuir. It's actually the quarterly networking event. So it's really a meet and greet at St. Regis. Come bring your friends and meet others in the BI and DW community.
Cool.
So it sounds pretty cool. If you're interested in business intelligence and data warehousing.
Next up is the Vancouver Hackspace Open House. So it's a weekly open house. Definitely bring a laptop to this one.
Would you bring a laptop to that? That's something that I wonder. Like, is a Hackspace actually like a software sort of hacking space? Or is it, hack on hardware? Or do you need a laptop for that? I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's always a good thing to bring with you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what do they talk about here? So bring your ideas, project kits, art, music, robots down for some good times with good people. So the space is open to everyone, members, non-members, and guests. And I don't know, I think if you are working on something in tech that you'd need to demo or explain, bring your laptop for that. Mm-hmm. Or just bring whatever cool things you're working on if you'd like feedback from the community and different inputs and insights.
Okay. Yeah, very cool.
Awesome.
It does look like, just from their meetup page, Vancouver Hackspace provides a physical space where people can gather to share ideas, equipment, opinions, and beer.
Nice.
All right, and that rounds out our Tuesday. Then we've got Wednesday the 23rd.
Which is a super busy day. Lots of stuff going on. Yeah. We're starting off with the Vancouver Linux desktop meeting. So that's Enjoy the Many Desktop Environments of Linux. That's over at D-Control starting at 4:30. And definitely bring a laptop to this. It's basically going over different topics ranging from software, making hardware work, customizing the desktop. It's great if you haven't ever seen Linux before and need help installing it, or different features.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Have you been to this meetup?
I haven't. I probably should go, though, because I do use Linux. So, yeah.
Something I've noticed, I think, from the Git meetup, and I think this one as well, is that I think it's a fairly loosely formatted meetup. Mm-hmm. So if you have, maybe you have some a laptop that you've been trying to install Linux on, or you want to do like a triple boot or something crazy like that, by all means, bring your gear over and you could probably get some help with that, or even just work on it and help someone else if they're trying to do the same thing. It seems like the kind of meetup where that's fine to do.
Awesome.
Yeah. And then we've got the Pluralsight Study Group from 5:30 to 6:30. This is happening over at P&I Digital Offices, 100-425 Carroll. Definitely bring a laptop to that, as well as a Pluralsight Study Group, a Pluralsight subscription. And it says here, what is the topic this week? I don't know. It's got a Google map, but it doesn't show what the topic is. So maybe that's to be, it does say TBD. predisposed or maybe discussed. And I guess it depends on who shows up and what you're going to be working on. Mm-hmm. Then we've got the Vancouver Windows Platform Developers Group. And this looks pretty cool. It looks like they have a meetup on...
The HoloLens.
On the HoloLens. Pretty developing cool. For augmented reality.
I like it. Mm-hmm. That's over at the Microsoft Center for Excellence, 7th mm-hmm. floor, 725 Granville Street, starting at 6. So yeah, it's looking at the HoloLens without the glitter and help from Unity. So first a quick tour of the HoloLens, then from a developer perspective, without the marketing buzz. And then they'll fire up Visual Studio, install a few NuGet packages, and create a hologram from Pure C Sharp.
So yeah, very cool. Cool. Yeah, so maybe kind of, might be great if you have access to Windows and or are a Windows developer. Mm-hmm. This is something that, you know, I wasn't super interested in until I actually tried a HoloLens, and I was like, wow, this is awesome. For me, it felt really cool. It looked really cool. The whole augmented reality of it, as opposed to maybe like more of a VR thing, mm-hmm. I just really, really liked this, and I'd love to get my hands on one of these and develop some stuff for it. So this is something that, you know, we talked earlier about, you know, are there any meetups that you're really excited about? Mm-hmm. I think I'm really excited about this one.
Awesome. Well, I just signed up for it, so I'll be there.
Very cool. Very cool. And we've got the Learn Data Science. This is the Advanced Data Science Reading Group. And this is happening over at SFU Venture Labs Harbor Center. That's 555 West Hastings, mm-hmm. Number 1200. And so this looks really cool as well.
Yeah, so it's multifaceted feature visualization. Mm-hmm. That sounds pretty awesome.
It does sound really cool. I'm not sure where you're seeing that, though. I see it says the faster R CNN real-time object detection.
Ah, okay. All right, we're looking at different lists.
Aha. Okay, so yeah, this is really cool. This is also another reading group where make sure to read it before you go there. Yes. Doors open at 6. The reading group actually starts at 6:30, though. Make sure to be there by 6:30 if you can and have read the paper. There is a link to the paper as well. It's super convenient. Click on the link, read the paper. It's only about, you know, 9 pages. Looks like a very good paper, actually, and should be fine.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Sounds great.
Then there's the full indie. This is over at the Butcher and Bullock, which is 911 West Pender. I love this meetup, even if you're just, you know, going for a bar night for some wings and some beer, because mm-hmm. Butcher and Bullock's pretty cool. But then Full Indie, they usually have some really great presentations, some games you can play. People bust out their laptops and show the games they've been working on. Mm-hmm. I went there with a friend of mine who'd been working on a game, wasn't really a games developer, but did a game as well. It was awesome, by the way. Cool. So he pulled that out and it was running in his browser and it got a lot of attention. So if you've been working on a game and you just want to show it off, or if you just want to go hang out and have some wings and beer at Butcher Bullock and watch some great presentations, there you go.
Sounds fun. Next up is the Vancouver Digital Project Managers group. So this is a group I've been going to for a long time. Mm-hmm. And it's basically, the topic this week is a modern approach to team management. It's going to be over at Invoke HQ. So they've changed they were previously over at a studio on West 5th, so they're back downtown. Mm-hmm. Which I think is a good idea, because it's a little, I found the crowds in the, if you have to travel outside of the downtown core, there aren't usually as many people. Mm-hmm. And that's usually because people are either working downtown or living downtown, and it's just too far of a commute. Mm-hmm. Which sounds, I don't know.
I know, absolutely, yeah. If any meetup's outside of the downtown core, yeah. I'm most likely not going to it. There's got to be a very compelling reason for me to get outside of it.
Yeah.
And that's just me. But also, like, if a meetup, I purposely left out a meetup today mm-hmm. that I thought would have been pretty cool. It was a VR meetup, but it's in Burnaby.
Yeah.
And that's not Vancouver.
Yeah.
It's just, like, you can, if you live in Burnaby, you could probably say when you go traveling that you live in Vancouver. It's not, in my opinion.
That is very true, Drew. So yeah, definitely check out this meetup if you're looking to. So the Digital Project Managers group is really interesting. They're very smart people. They've mostly all worked on digital projects.
I'll also clarify, sorry, my previous opinion was, for people who live in the downtown core, mm-hmm. We live in the downtown core, or I do anyway. I live in the downtown core because I like walking places and I like being able to walk places. And if it's across a bridge, I can't. and I pay more to live in the downtown core so that I don't have to have a car, for one, so that I don't have to take a bus or do whatever, that I can just walk places. And I think that actually saves me the money that I would pay if I had lived outside. But then on the other hand, if and when I did live outside of the Vancouver downtown core, I had something like, you know, a bus pass or a car or a bike or whatever that would allow me to quickly and easily go other places. So if that were the case, I wouldn't mind traveling, say, to the downtown core.
That makes sense. Well, I know if you're living in an outside area and coming down here and trying to drive, parking can be a prohibitive factor. So, yeah, it's definitely nice when you're centrally located. Cool. So that's it for that meetup group.
Yep. And then we've got the network admin and support professional. So this looked really awesome. Actually, I was really happy to see this as a meetup group, which I haven't seen before. I don't know. I don't see that they've had any other meetups, but it looks really good. And it looks like 25 people so far signed up and more to come. So programmatically generate and upload 200 plus router using Python, NetMiko, and Jinja. Sounds awesome. This is at BCIT downtown campus, 555 Seymour Street from 6 p.m. I would bring a laptop to this. I don't know that you're going to have to, but there are some quick URLs to take a look at. One is YAML, so that's telling me that this is probably going to be either hands-on or some sort of, you know, work-through, walk-through type presentation. So you got links to YAML, Jinja, Python, and Pynet for NetMiko, and the GitHub repo for NetMiko. This is great.
Cool. And that's YAML, not HAML. So are you likely to go to this one?
Yeah. Well, the two are not related at all, really. They just happen to sound a little bit similar. I actually really like YAML.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
YAML's great.
So next up is Vancouver Growth Hackers. That is over at Unbounce, which is Suite 400, 401 West Georgia. Starting at 6:30, runs to 9 p.m. And it's basically how to launch 8 growth experiments in 8 weeks, presented by Brian Hemerick of Unbounce.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And then we have at Vancouver Hackspace a soldering workshop.
Cool.
That's kind of interesting. Now, that's something that I remember my dad always had a bunch of soldering irons and was doing some soldering on this and that. And I've never soldered anything, actually. So maybe I should go to this.
Well, I think it's a useful skill to have, for sure.
I think so, too. And I think that if I can upgrade my MacBook's RAM with my soldering skills, then I don't know if that's what I'd want to practice on, though.
It's like practicing. Yeah, I don't know. I've seen it done. I haven't done it myself. I don't know if I'd want to do it on anything that I own until I know it very well. But yeah. Who knows?
Yeah. All right. Anyway, might be something fun to go to.
Yep.
All right. And that's our Wednesday. Then we got Thursday. So we're starting out 8:30 to 10 a.m. on Thursday. We have Vancouver Lean Coffee. Mm-hmm. This is over at Nelson the Seagull, 315 Carroll Street. They must have good coffee there because there's all these morning tech meetups there. And I think tech people like good coffee.
Yes.
I would like to hope so.
Definitely. And it's a really great space as well. It's a nice big open space, kind of warehouse style. So it's good for getting groups of people together. And it's not like I know some of the coffee shops that I go to that I actually love are very small and kind of cramped. So if they get busy, it's hard to have a conversation. Whereas this place is so nice and open that you can really have a decent conversation. Plus, they have great pastries.
So very cool. I haven't been there, so I'll have to check it out. And this is a meetup that I keep promising Jared or mentioning to him that I really want to go to. I'm sure he doesn't miss not having me there. But I'd really love to go to this because I'm sure it's a great meetup.
Yeah, definitely.
And then from 4 p.m., we have a SOFIS Network Security Meetup for Western Canada.
Awesome.
And this is at the SOFIS head office. This looks like it'll be a lot of fun as well.
Very cool. That starts at, at 4.
At 4, yeah.
Awesome.
And then from 5 to 7, the DDD CQRS ES Practitioners Meetup. What's the topic?
To be determined.
Is it really?
I'm just double checking right now.
Okay.
I know we had a really busy week, so we are looking at maybe changing the format for that. I know we had sort of a 3-week cycle where we would have an event storming and then 2 weeks of code and have a finished product at the end of that cycle. And sometimes it would be 3 weeks of code, depending on the complexity. But last week, we broke from protocol and had more of an architectural discussion. So
it might be a good week to just drop in and see what's going on.
Definitely.
Awesome. Then we have Startup Drinks Vancouver. This is from 6. It usually goes pretty late, so if you happen to go to one of the other meetups and then wander into that, maybe if you're at the DDD Secure SES Practitioners meetup, you can go to Vancouver Startup Drinks after as well. There's usually kind of waves of people. It's pretty fun. Don't need to bring a laptop, but maybe come by and talk to some interesting people. You might meet somebody doing marketing or SEO, somebody building out a project, some software developers, project managers. There's people in and around tech and interested in startups. I do tend to avoid some things with the word startup because I think that it's going to be, you know, hey, I've got a business idea. Can you build it out for me? And maybe I'll give you 10%. Yeah, no thanks.
Nope.
but it didn't seem to be like that at all. It was actually great.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I like it.
And then we've got, so VanQ. So its location here is to be disclosed. Or determined, I'm not sure yet. Mm-hmm. Maybe they have it and they just haven't disclosed it yet, or maybe they haven't determined it yet. And this is from 6 p.m. It does say something that I really liked that it said on the meetup, which was downtown Vancouver. To be disclosed, downtown Vancouver.
Okay, that's so good.
At least you have an area where it's going to be.
Yeah, that's always nice to know, even if you're not sure entirely where it's going to be or if you've got a couple locations that are still waiting to hear back from. Mentioning it'll be in Vancouver or Burnaby or Richmond or something like that definitely is great to let people know so they can plan.
Yeah, and they've also got the topic, so an evolution of quality practices, cool. Changing the testing model in a game company. So very specific topic, and it sounds really cool.
Nice, and this is one of the ones you're really excited about going to.
It is, yeah, it's one of my favorite meetups.
Awesome.
And then we've got Vancouver Closure from 6 to 9 over at CodeCore. Make sure to bring a laptop and be ready to hack on some Closure.
Awesome.
We've got Distributed Systems Vancouver. So this is over at Stat Search Analytics, 704 Alexander Street from 6:30 p.m. Have you been out to any of these meetups?
I haven't. It does say the November edition, so I'm wondering if they run monthly or if they run quarterly.
Well, it looks like the last one they had was in January, so I'm guessing it's just, you know, when they have something interesting to talk about.
Ad hoc, yeah.
But it does seem pretty cool. Data Pipelines and Distributed Systems Vancouver.
Cool. Speaker is Daniel, I'm going to totally butcher this name, sorry, Pazelvi?
The funny thing about that is you never have to say you're going to butcher a name. You can just butcher it and then everybody knows.
So, I suppose that's true.
But I think it seems like a relatively easy name, like Pezli. It's either Pazelli or Pezli. I don't know. Daniel Pazelli. Daniel Pezli. Yeah, you're right. I think I butchered it as well. Sorry, Daniel. But it sounds like it'll be great. Stream processing in an extremely high traffic environment with Daniel Pazelli of Spunk.
Awesome. Spunk.
And we got the Vancouver Drupal Users Group. This is over at the Network Hub, third floor, 422 Richards from 6:30. I'd bring a laptop to this if I were going, which I'm probably not, although I hear it is quite a good meetup. I'm just not particularly interested in Drupal. It looks pretty cool. There's the presenters. Gerard is a front-end developer at Fuse Interactive with an interest in Drupal development. Chris is a Drupal developer at Fuse with an interest in front-end development. And by their powers combined, they hope to unite front-end and back-end developers once and for all. Well, that actually does sound really cool. Maybe I would like to check this out.
That's a great approach.
I think so too.
I like that.
And then Van Dev. So this is also a really great meetup. This is over at UBC Robson Square. Says C550 800 Robson Street. So that's just down below, kind of by where the skating rink is. You go in and downstairs. And this is always very well presented. And this particular one is the strategy pattern. So it should be really awesome.
Nice. Sounds fun.
Yeah. And that's our Thursday. Then what's happening on Friday the 25th?
So we have a couple things happening, which is great. Because usually Friday there's not that much going on. We've got BC Tech Grub in the Hub again from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. at BCTIA, which is Great Northern Way, 887 Great Northern Way. And that, it was last week, so I'm going to assume that's maybe a weekly meetup, but we'll confirm.
Okay, so that's from 12 to 1 at BC Tech Grub in the Hub, and the topic is?
I don't have that up.
Okay, it's predicting the future of tech venture capital in BC.
Okay, cool.
Here, it looks great. And then from 7 p.m., we've got 9cat.net Tech and Startup Weekly. This is over at 950 777 Hornby Street from 6:30.
Yep, sounds fun. And this is something I was going to go to last week, but I was meetuped out. So yeah. I didn't.
Okay.
But I will, I'll try to go to it this week. And if not, I will definitely go to this soon.
Very cool. And then we have this other one that I saw from 7 p.m. on Friday that I thought looked really cool, From Sea to Sea.
Oh.
And it has night hacks. So from 7 p.m. looks like they'll be doing some programming in C. And they've got, as their meetup picture, a nice picture of the KNR book, The C Programming Language. So it should be a lot of fun.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah. And then Saturday, what's happening?
Saturday, we've got Vancouver Pixel Crafters Weekend Survival Workshop up in Squamish.
Yeah, so I'm actually really surprised that we have this here. I personally don't think this has anything to do with tech other than the group that is running it.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts?
Thoughts?
I personally wouldn't add this on to our list, and I don't like it.
Well, how do you really feel, Drew?
I don't know. Like, it's kind of weird. Is this excursion only for people in tech?
It's not, but you know what? It's
I know they reached out to a number of meetups, but I just don't feel it has anything to do with the tech community, and I don't think it belongs.
All right.
It's personally, I mean, you can totally disagree with that, and I could be wrong, but I just wanted to voice my opinion on that.
No, it's a very valid point. So it might not have anything to do with tech, but think of all the other things you'll learn that will enhance your life. So I think that's a good thing to include.
Sure. So what I'm really disappointed about is that we didn't include this week's meetup on baking Christmas cakes. Because think of all the things you'd learn. Christmas is coming up.
And, right.
You know, or anything else that's unrelated to tech.
And if you have any cake making meetups, let me know. Because I'll make sure to include those.
Because this year I am planning on kind of going all Christmassy and nice. Doing some stuff. So I don't know if I'll make a cake, but I think for sure... well, yeah, I think maybe a cake. It's about time. I've never made a cake, so I should. And that's our meetups around town. And we're here with our special guests, Jade and Alex. So thank you very much for coming back a year later.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Awesome. So there's so much to talk about. One thing, especially, is the lack of James.
Right? Yeah.
James was here. Didn't see that happening, but now we have Alex. Another Alex.
Yeah, hi.
Nice to meet another Alex, as always.
Same.
So we'll have to catch Alex up to speed as far as who are Jade and Alex and what was going on and why did we have them on to begin with. So maybe Jade, maybe you can tell us a little bit about a year ago, what we talked about and why we had you on the show.
So a year ago, Alex and I were in week 6 of 8 of our bootcamp at Code Core. We both had come from very different backgrounds, taking a bootcamp to learn how to become developers. So a year ago, we came and we talked a bit about what we were doing, where we were from, what we hoped to do. I do remember a little bit about, you know, whether we were looking for a small company, a big company, and how we were enjoying our journey to becoming a developer.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that, yeah, I remember that. And I think I was trying to give some advice as far mm-hmm. as, you know, what to expect in an interview. And kind of coming from a lot of my personal experience and kind of sometimes jaded, sometimes not. And Alex?
Yeah, so yeah, Jade summed it up really well. I came from a film background before I did the boot camp. Spent about 7 years in post-production and kind of self-taught myself a lot of the development stuff that I was doing there and then decided I wanted to kind of fill in the gaps with a boot camp. So that's how I ended up there.
Nice. Awesome. So, Jade, what's your background in?
So, I have a master's of science in neuroscience. So, I have a very science-heavy background. Before I started the bootcamp, I have worked as a technician in immunology, neuroimmunology, and then cancer genetics before I made the career switch.
I think I remember you saying you spent some time in Alberta.
I did. I was working with a professor on trying to find a cure for multiple sclerosis.
Nice. And Alex, I think if I remember correctly, I don't know if I'm just kind of adding this in my own memory, but you had done some Python work?
Yep, that's right. And I think Jade has done Python as well. But yeah, I did a bit of Python programming for my work for automating file transfers and things like that. And then I ended up building towards the end, building a database system in FileMaker Pro to manage a bunch of our assets and our workflows. And so I kind of eventually wanted to use Rails to make that process even easier and even better. And that's kind of how I found my way into the bootcamp in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty awesome. So when we had you on, I think it was week six, you actually ducked out for the first couple of hours of the group project that you were working on.
Yes.
So how did that group project know? How did that group project go? We've been waiting a year to find out.
It went well.
Okay.
Yeah. I think we must have done that on a Saturday, this interview. And then, so we had Saturday and Sunday to finish up, and then we presented on Monday. I remember I was the team lead on our project, and Sunday night, I think CodeCore closed around 8 p.m., 9 p.m. We still wanted to work, so we went to a 24-hour Blends, worked for a couple more hours, and then, did as much as we could.
Yeah, my memories of this weekend a year ago was there was a lot of learning about Git on the fly. Mm-hmm. We learned how to work with Git very quickly, very well.
Yeah, that was the first time we were really exposed in the bootcamp to collaborative workflows with Git. Before that, we had really just done it on our own to varying degrees of success.
And of course, when you're doing it on your own, you know what happened. When someone else is merging onto your branch, it's a bit more complicated.
Yeah, that's kind of the big, I think the main point almost of
the group project.
The group project is to just get people working together with Git to, you know, to go through some of the frustration, start to understand what a merge conflict is and how to resolve it, how to force push to master and make everyone mad at you. Nice. But that was a year ago, so a lot has changed. Tell us a little bit about, you know, finishing up the bootcamp. What did you feel like at first when you first finished? Did you have something to go to? I think, Alex, you had something lined up.
Not quite when I finished the bootcamp. I had one interview before, kind of, I think maybe the last week of the bootcamp, for a local tech company, and I bombed it, but kind of thankfully, because that was, I think I almost expected like the first interview going and you're not really going to be very prepared. So I prepared as much as I could, but I think when I sat down with them, the first question they asked me, almost literally the first question was, have you used CoffeeScript? And I hadn't really used CoffeeScript, which is, so I'm like, oh yeah, no, I've used it a little bit, but you know, I think I could get used to it.
Now you probably have, and so I'd love to come back and ask some of your opinions on it, but okay. So that interview didn't go so well?
Yeah, it didn't go so well. Didn't end up getting the job, but I definitely learned a lot from that. And I started that habit of, after the interview, basically right after I left the building, I kind of got on my phone and tried to write down notes of what went well and what didn't go well to help me in my subsequent interviews that I had. And I found that was really helpful. And nice. I ended up February, getting a job at Brewhouse.
So that was, I guess, if we had you end in November, December, so this was maybe a month or a month and a half after you finished, after the holiday period.
It was Christmas during that period. So,
yeah. Nice. At Brewhouse.
That's right. Yeah, where I was until about a month ago.
Awesome. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit after. We're going to talk to Jade, but then we'll come back and talk about, you know, first experiences actually working, and then where you're at now.
So me, so we finished the bootcamp in December, and then I worked at my old job for a little bit in January, and then I got a job in February with a startup. So I had interviewed with two startups. The first one was a bit more informal. I didn't get the job. The second one was the one that was successful, and that was a more serious interview because it was a two-stage process. And by the second stage, I came in and they're like, here's a coding project. Give us what you can in an hour and a half. And then we'll sit down for an hour and we'll talk about what you did and what your next steps are. And that was the job that I got.
So what was the hour and a half like? Were you by yourself? Were you with others? Did you have internet access?
I had internet access. So I sat in a room with my future boss. So basically he gave me two data files and said, this is what our company is doing. This is what I want you to do. Just do your best. You don't have to finish. I'll be here if you have any questions. And then I started, and he sat there and he did his own work. And I like sat on my computer and I started coding.
Do you think it was, did you feel better or worse having that other person beside you or in the room?
Oh my goodness. In my situation, I think it was definitely good because I ran into inconsistencies in the data, in the data that he gave me. And so I'd be like, this is really weird. Like it doesn't seem consistent. So I will, after, you know, troubleshooting it for 5-10 minutes, I'd be like, okay, I'm running out of time. Turned and be like, so this is what I'm noticing. And you know, it compiles, it works, but I'm getting errors. And he's like, oh yeah, the data's like that. And I'm like, oh, he's like, yep. I'm like, okay, well, he's like, yeah, don't worry about it. Just do what you can with the other stuff. I'm like, okay, I will. I like, it's good to know that it's not my code, that it's actually the source that we're working with. And that was I think, like, looking back, that was a really good learning experience for me.
Nice.
Yeah, you probably scored some points with him figuring out that problem, being like, oh, it's actually inconsistent.
Maybe. I know that at the end of it, at the end of the hour and a half, when I showed him what I did, he kind of went, oh, you got farther than I thought you would. And I'm like, wait, what does that mean?
Yeah, what does that mean? That's interesting. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Exactly.
Did you have low expectations?
Or yes. It was the whole like, wait, like did I do well? Or like, did you have low expectations? Or did everyone else just not do as well? Or like...
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. It also sounds like something I really liked about what you said was that when he presented it, he said, you know, this is the type of things that we do.
Yeah.
And so maybe they have this kind of data and maybe there are some inconsistencies to how you deal with that. And it could be a learning process for them as well, but at least it's very representative, I guess, of the type of work that they do. So did you find that that was consistent with your experience?
Oh, gosh, yes. So, I mean, it was a really good learning experience in that once I entered my job and I started working with what they were doing, like that is the case. We're getting our data from other sources and sometimes it's human entered and you cannot trust the input. It's like there's a consistent structure. So since working there, I work with CSV files, JSON files. JSON is the best by far. And I've also worked with XML. And you think, oh, XML structure, you know, like it should be structured. You should trust the structure. But no, humans think in very different ways. And different humans also think differently about how they're going to give you their information.
Yeah, it's a really, I think, a really interesting and kind of a hard problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Okay, so back to you, Alex. So you had a couple of interviews. What were the interview processes themselves like? I think your process after the interview of saying, you know, here's what went well, here's what didn't, sounds really good. What about on the other side? Do you think you learned a lot from the interview processes? Do you think that was also reflective of the type of work environment that they had?
I would say so, yeah. Like the first interview that I had, the one I said I bombed, was interesting because it didn't seem that structured. So I was just kind of put in a room with two of the senior developers who I don't think normally do interviews. Right. So maybe they were like, okay, well, we just have to, you know, suss this out, see what you're like, which was fine. So I definitely learned from that in that I just have to really expect anything.
Yeah.
I had another round of interviews with another company that started in a more of a kind of traditional process where I had a phone interview with the in-house recruiter there. I moved on from that to a take-home technical interview, so kind of like Jade's where you have a challenge that they give you a certain amount of time to do. I did that, and then from that moved on to an in-person technical interview with some of the devs where we talked about the results of that project as well as some other bits and pieces about my experience there. And then the other interview I had for Brewhouse was slightly different again. So that was also just kind of a brief chat with the CEO over coffee, just getting to know me. And then a pairing interview with one of the senior developers there. And so that was really cool because it was just kind of sitting down. I was programming, he was watching, and he had given me a short challenge of, you know, implement this feature in a Rails app and we'll just see how far we get in 2 hours. And we were both doing it together. So yeah, I really, that's really where I got the best feeling of all, like, the interviews that I had, like, that this was a very collaborative environment, and nobody was kind of crossing their arms over their, over my shoulders, saying, like, okay, now I'm just going to silently sit here, and you can do what you, as much as you can. It was very much collaborative, and I felt like I could ask questions and things like that, so, yeah, so I would say I had three or four very different experiences of interview processes.
Nice. So did you find that, I guess with the last one, actually pairing with the CEO and building out a feature in a Rails app, was that pretty reflective of the type of work environment it was?
Definitely, yeah. Definitely. And it was funny because the room we did it in, we obviously did it in the office. So we just kind of sat down on this couch and worked on that. And so that same experience I would just have over and over again, but working on our actual client projects. And so every time I went and sat down there, I would just remember my interview from a couple months before, and it's kind of cool to think about how far I'd come.
Nice. Yeah, I really like that. I think that as much as possible, the interview process should reflect the work environment.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it sounds like for both of you, that was the experience that you had with the jobs that you landed.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice that you're able to have some kind of assignment, technical assignment, pair programming exercise to get a sense of the work as well, so you had an idea of what you'd be stepping into.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I always heard nightmare scenarios about going into a technical interview and having to draw out like a bubble sort algorithm on a whiteboard in front of three different people. I never had that experience, thankfully.
Yeah, that was my nightmare too.
So what? Yeah, why do you think that is? Like, I think still a lot of places do have the whiteboard coding challenge or the, you know, write some code right in front of me while I'm right behind you watching, which doesn't sound like, in your case, Jade, you had a coding challenge that was kind of in person, but it wasn't like the person was behind you watching every move that you made, right?
No, my boss was just very casually, very obviously sitting beside me working on his own stuff. Like, it got to the part where I was like, I need to ask you about your data, but you look busy. But like, he was just like, yep, no, like, you have a question? I'm like, yeah. So, like, I think it's interesting because, like, I really do appreciate the kind of interview I had because I feel like, as a potential employee, right, I got a really good sense of what it would be like working for these people and the kind of products that they're going to be working on. It was, like, looking back, it was very reflective of my current work at the company.
So a couple of questions, I guess. You both come from different but very interesting backgrounds with some mixed technical, obviously a science background. Mm. And I think you did music or something?
Film.
Yeah. As your major?
That's right, yeah.
And you also worked in the film industry for a number of years, but also get into coding as well and even did some at work, which was pretty cool. So I guess a two-part question. How do you feel? Do you feel that you were well prepared, A, for the interviews and for the type of work that you got into, A, from the boot camp, and B, from your previous experience before the boot camp?
Yeah, I think both of those experiences helped me and end up where I am now. So I always was taking the boot camp with the aim of filling in the gaps of knowledge that I had from self-teaching myself. So I think I mentioned last time that I had tried to teach myself Rails, and I got a certain distance and then kind of realized that I was maybe biting off a bit more than I could take, and I really valued being able to learn from instructors as well as continue learning on my own. So, but I think as well that the experience that I had before the boot camp was really valuable for giving me that even more extra head start. So by the time I finished the boot camp, I felt really confident about the skills that I currently had. And I wasn't under any illusions that I knew everything. And I definitely found out in the first couple of months that I still had a lot to learn, which I was expecting and I welcomed. But yeah, I would say both of those experiences kind of combined really well to help me end up where I am today.
For me, it's interesting because both my experience at Cold Core and my background helped me in different and sort of abstract ways. So at the company, like the languages I'm working with are not languages that we worked on during the bootcamp. I started out working on C#, which we did not touch at all in the bootcamp. And then from C#, I went directly into SQL and then TypeScript to do React and Python with the Django framework. So it was a lot of I walked in to a job with a very different stack that I had been used to from Cold Core. But Cold Core definitely helped in that I asked a lot of questions my first 3 months there. And being at Cold Core, understanding the process behind making a Rails app, understanding the logic behind code helped me ask, I think, the questions I need to ask to understand how to work with C#, how to work with SQL, and how to work with Python. So that's like, those are sort of the things that Cold Core really helped me with. Also, of course, the understanding that it's an experimental process. And that's actually where my science background comes into play. As a technician, I ran a lot of experiments. And when you're running an experiment, you're troubleshooting. And essentially, when you're writing code, that's what you're doing. And so, it was really, really interesting because when I'm giving a task and, you know, you work on it, you iterate. The difference is when you're writing code, you iterate a lot faster than when you're running a biological experiment where, you know, in the lab, one experiment can take 1 to 2 weeks to complete before you see the results. Whereas when you're at a computer, you press the button and 5 seconds later, you know if it passes or fails. So it was I definitely feel that my science background helped me in picking up the skills I needed to pick up at my current job. I also feel that the sort of rigorous logical thinking that I learned from, that I got from the sciences has helped me organize my work as a programmer. Understanding, you know, here's a piece of project. What are the steps I have to break it down into? Which are the problems that I need to solve first? And which are the problems that needs to be solved, but I can't until I have these other pieces of the puzzle.
Very interesting. So you also mentioned, you said something like, you know, as a programmer, troubleshooting is what we do.
Mm-hmm.
How would you define troubleshooting? And has that changed, do you think, from, you know, your opinion on that before the bootcamp, during, after the bootcamp, and now, you know, a year into your career as a programmer?
So I think my troubleshooting has only sort of expanded during the bootcamp, right? Like there's a lot of stuff that you don't know and you'll just Google it, go to Stack Overflow, look at blogs. And I still do the same thing now. There's the level of troubleshooting I know has changed because, I'm not just looking for like a simple code snippet now. Whereas, you know, back during Cold Core in the first 3 months, I was. But I'm also noticing that very recently in the last month, I'd be writing code and I will be Googling a solution. And the solution isn't as, I'm trying to do this, how do I do it? It's more of like, well, I'm doing this and it kind of works, but it's really, really clumsy. Like, it's really, really clumsy. And as I go back to modify it for other case scenarios, it's really hard to keep track of everything. This isn't the best way of going about it. And so I feel that my troubleshooting still encompasses what I did during the bootcamp, but it's also, I'm dealing with slightly more complicated problems now as well. And these problems aren't necessarily the code I'm writing, but how I'm writing it.
Yeah, and I would say for me, I actually have been reading The Pragmatic Programmer recently by Robert C. Martin. And one of the phrases that has stuck with me is programming by coincidence, where he's, I think he sums it up by basically saying that it's one thing to get something working, but it's another thing to know why it's working. So I feel like earlier in my career in the boot camp and even before, I would get, you know, some sort of error, or I would encounter some sort of problem and I'd either Google my way out of it or I'd kind of slog through and figure out something until it worked, but maybe not necessarily understanding why. And now, yeah, I think, Jade, what you said about being more debugging in more of a kind of abstract way where you're saying, like, what, I know this works, but what, is there a better way to do it? I think that's definitely very relevant. Mm-hmm. I'm working on a project right now that involves a lot of refactoring of existing code. So a lot of the issues we run into are kind of distant side effects where you make a change over in one place and you run your tests and you find a failure in a completely different place of code that you probably maybe haven't read before that was written 2 years ago. And it's very interesting to kind of go look through that, and because it's often hard to Google because you're not... you're working on production code that's not, you know, obviously out there in the wild. So you rely on just trying to read through that code and conceptually understand it so that you know why the thing that you wrote broke that other thing. And that's what I've been focusing on a lot, is thinking about how those design decisions that I'm making now or that were made previously, how those are kind of working and interplaying and affecting each other.
Yeah, and on the topic of tests, I mean, during the boot camp, we covered test-driven development, and we sort of like dive into tests for a few days, and everyone in the class was like, "Oh my God, this is so hard," but you know, when you're working and you're not creating a project from scratch, when you're building a project over months at a time with other people working on it, or you're working on a pre-existing project, you're modifying it, tests. You need them.
They're a lifesaver.
They are. Like, without them, you could brick stuff and not know about it until much further down the road when it becomes that much harder, exponentially harder, to track down the change that broke your code in one corner of the little universe.
Yeah, nice. Very wise advice. So what are some of the, I guess some of the things that you've learned on the job? So from day one to where you're at now, how would you say you've changed as a person, either how you approach working with a team, how you approach work in general? Are there any habits you've picked up or work styles or ways that you do things differently from when you first started?
I think one of the big things for me has been learning to think at different levels. So, and what I mean by that is you can spend a couple of hours deep in the code actually working and writing lines of code and troubleshooting errors that you're getting. You can also spend time taking a step back from that and thinking about the architecture of what you're creating and how and what design decisions you're actually making. That's something I've been thinking about a lot recently, and I think something that I've really tried to foster in myself in the last couple of months as well is being able to analyze a problem from that high level before I kind of just dive in and start trying to solve it. And yeah, really understanding either through kind of whiteboarding with colleagues or just drawing in my notebook, trying to understand how I'm going to design the solution to this problem before I get down and actually write out lines.
I think Alex hits it on the spot. Like the things, like the way that my workflow now really, it's a lot more about thinking at the different levels. When I first started, I was given a task. I was like, oh, this is cool. I'm going to jump right into it and start coding. And that's completely different from how I approach it now. Not only because the data that I'm working with is a lot more complex, but it's also because if I start jumping in now, the code's going to break. It's not going to work. It will work for like a small number of the cases, the case that I looked at, and it will break for the other 95% of the data. So like a lot of the things what I do now is I sit down and I look at it and I'm like, okay, you know, how, like, what's the structure of this data? How do I work with it? What do I want out of it? And how do I get that data for these different case scenarios? And then there's also, I think now that I've been in the job for a number of months, I understand the code base that we're working with. And like Alex was bringing up, making the design decisions that says, you know, is this going to be maintainable? Will this be easy to work with? Can I easily add to this? Or can I easily take away from it? Can I easily modify it without breaking everything else? And these are where concepts from CodeCore that you read about from coding blogs, like, you know, being modular, that, oh, I get it now. Like, it's really, really important to not break your code that way. I mean, it's sort of the whole... It's a lot of understanding about, you know, when I'm working with different stuff, it's some of the questions that I struggle with is, you know, are these similar enough to be really the same class with different attributes are left null? Or should they be completely different classes? Or should they inherit from the same class? Or do I use an interface? So these are some of the things that I'm working with. You know, when you're designing a database structure for this new data, like how do you do it? Can you do it as just one table? Do you need different tables? What kind of relationship is it? One to many, many to many? These are sort of the things that you really have to sit down and tease out before you start going to the code. And it's also very iterative, I find, because, you know, you can only stare at the data and the code and plan it for so long before you go out there and you start coding to see, does this work? Does it work for all cases? Where does it fail? And then going back to the design board. So there's a very back and forth process. And I can see when I'm working on something like this, my desk is a mess with tabs and papers everywhere. Cause it's so abstract at the same time. And yet you're working with details. And so it's really challenging to keep track of. But that's part of the excitement and wonder of the job, I think.
What are some of your go-tos when, say, you have some design decisions to make or you're working on a project? Is it, you know, do you whiteboard things with colleagues? Do you check things in some IRC chats? Or who are maybe the people that you would look up to or consult? Or what are some of those resources?
For me, whiteboarding with colleagues definitely helps a lot. Especially recently, we've been doing that a lot in the project. We'll kind of have weekly or bi-weekly whiteboarding sessions where we all kind of realize we're working on solving similar problems, so we'll kind of take a step back and figure out one solution that works for everything or that making sure we're kind of on the same page, and then we'll kind of go back. So that's been really helpful for me. One of my mentors that from Brewhouse and then now from Unbounce where I am is Philippe.
Oh,
and Gabe as well. Philippe is working with us now at Unbounce too, and I always find it really, really like exciting how he can just kind of really simplify a problem down to the most elegant solution. So that's something I'm really trying to learn from. So whenever I get stuck on a design related decision, I'll definitely go to him.
I didn't realize Philippe was at Unbounce now, but that's something interesting that I've actually read blog posts from both of you while you were at Unbounce.
Yeah.
That I found quite interesting. So,
So my position's a little bit different. My boss is away quite a bit, traveling. So when I do run into design solutions, the first thing I do really is I draw it out, I write it out, I look at the code. There's a lot of Googling because a lot of the times too, it involves terms and consequences that I'm not yet familiar with. And then normally what I do then is, you know, I come up with like a short list, maybe 2, 3, 4 different options. I go through it and then on Slack, I Slack my boss and I say, hey, here's the problem I'm dealing with. This is why, like, you know, this is why I can't do it this way. And this is why the pre-existing structure doesn't work, or this is what I'm like starting on right now. And these are the solutions, the potential solutions I have. What do you think? And, you know, sometimes you'll be like, oh, do it this way. Or sometimes he'll be, and sometimes like the other person we're working with who works remotely will like chime in, oh, you know, there's this other solution. And then sometimes a discussion will ensue where he's like, you know, my boss would be like, I don't know what's best. And then we would discuss it. And then he'll be like, you know, either be like, well, maybe this is the better solution. Or he might just go, you know, you make the decision, but let me know when you make a merge request and I'll look over your code. So that's sort of where I guess I'm sort of currently at right now.
Nice. So do you ever use something that I found I like for, sometimes I'm just not sure, you know, and I have some people to talk to, and then maybe I'm not sure or I'm not completely satisfied with some of the whiteboarding that we've done or some of the discussions that we've had, and I want kind of more. So I'll usually try and somewhat genericize the problem and the potential solutions, and maybe write up some gists or get something out there that I could easily share with other people, maybe make some posts in different IRCs. I haven't found IRC to be particularly useful, to be honest, a lot of the time, because I think a lot of the time it's kind of simple text-based chat that is good for simple text-based answers and questions. which are often, you know, where do I find this info? It's right there, idiot, or something. Yes. and those are the kind of answers I expect to get. Not that that's all IRC chats. But then another one that I thought was pretty interesting was, you know, let's say I come up with a solution and it works, but I'm not particularly happy with the design of it or the speed, for example. And, you know, there's a lot of things that I can spend a lot of time researching it. But another thing that I really want is someone to code review it. And maybe some of the people that I'm working with, they've code reviewed it and it passed code review and it was fine and it's working, but I'm still not particularly happy with it. So I'll take that and also genericize it, and then codereview.slackoverflow.com I found to be pretty helpful, like in, you know, coaxing out some, you know, oh, here's an optimization, or, you know, here's a difference between using this or that, or here's an optimization for your query that you didn't think of. I found that pretty helpful. Do you have anything like that?
Yeah, that's a good point. I've heard of the code review on Stack Overflow, but I haven't actually used it. Mm-hmm. Should check that out. For me, I definitely really enjoy, so we do code review on every pull request as well. We did it at Brewhouse and we do it at Unbounce too. And so that's also very helpful to ensure not only that the solution works and the tests pass, but it makes sense to other developers, because again, you're going to be reading that code way more than you write it. So you want to make sure that everybody else understands it, and also getting good suggestions on how to improve the architecture. And I find a pattern that emerges a lot is if you make a pull request and submit something for code review, it might be, you know, you might get responses of just, you know, fixing simple typos and stuff. But then when it comes to discussing the implementation and how you architected it, I find it's, after a couple of back and forth comments, it's really valuable to just get in the same room and really just talk through it and, again, have that kind of whiteboarding session to figure it out. But definitely that first step of putting your code out there and having a concrete example to discuss, I think, really helps.
So I've also heard of code review on Stack Overflow, Stack Exchange. Haven't actually used it. My company's a little different in that because we're so small, we don't do formal code reviews. We sort of did in the beginning just because my boss didn't quite trust my code. But we haven't really been doing it so much now. And I think we are overdue soon for a time to get everyone on the same page, because I know the different parts of the project are both growing quite rapidly. And so as it starts to, it's been converging, but as it starts to converge again, we're going to have to go through that process. So we haven't really done that yet. It's really more of the whole, like, if I write code that my boss is like, oh, that's fine, it works, but I'm not comfortable with it, I keep an eye on it, it's in the back of my mind. And then down the road, when it causes a problem, I go back. And by that point in time, my understanding has usually gone up a little bit and I can make it a little bit better. Little bit at a time.
Nice. So, like, continual improvement. I like that.
It really is.
Okay, why don't you tell us about where you're working now, the companies. Also, I have another question that might lead into, which is, do you feel that going through a boot camp was a solid choice for you? And if you have any advice that you could give to some listeners who are considering one or considering hiring people from boot camps, what would that be?
Currently, I'm working at Unbounce, like I said, as of a month ago. And I was, working at Brewhouse since February, and towards, I guess, August or September, Brewhouse decided to focus more on their own product, which was GoodBits, because previously they had done client work and product work. And so then, as a result of that, they needed to find a home for some of their engineers, and Unbounce was actually a really good fit in terms of the kind of same values we shared, transparency and collaboration. So the three of us joined last month and have had a blast so far. I'm really enjoying the new challenges and the new work environment. In terms of advice, well, I guess firstly, the bootcamp definitely did help get me where I am today, and really gave me the skills, not only the direct technical skills of here's what Rails is and here's how to use it, but also just the troubleshooting and analytical skills that I use every day now. So I would say advice for people who are thinking of taking a boot camp or post boot camp would be to, in addition to all the stuff you're learning in the boot camp, try to read as much code as possible. So one thing I started to do in January when I was still looking for a job was I would just go hang out on the Rails GitHub and just look at pull requests and just kind of look at the discussions that were going on and try to understand myself what was being discussed and what the decisions were being made. Mm-hmm. A lot of it at the time was really over my head, because if you are used to working on your own projects by yourself or maybe with a few other people, and then you go look at something like the Rails code base, it can be quite overwhelming. But I think also you can learn quite a lot from that, even if you don't quite understand all of it so far. And it's, I think, a good barometer as well to go back and see how much you understand after a couple of months.
So I'm working for a startup. When I joined, it was called a Smart Company. And now we've changed the name to Motion Hall. We do research commercialization. I do feel that if I hadn't gone through the bootcamp, I wouldn't have gotten the job. And part of the reason is not only does going to the bootcamp get you comfortable writing code and lots of and iterating very quickly and finding solutions on your own, it starts to teach you some of the basic computer science concepts that it's very difficult to get on your own. Or some of the, why do people do things this way? Why do computer science people like do things this way? Advice for people going to a bootcamp or coming out of one. Before you go into a bootcamp, you should have, I think, tried to code on your own. Like I had done that and it helps you because not only, you know, when we type, we do a lot of typos. But if you're writing code with typos in it, it will drive you crazy because you'll be hunting down those typos forever. So like just get into the habit of being consistent, typing properly, indentation.
Indentation plus one for that.
Yes, right? Formatting your code so that it's readable. Even like something that I had to learn on the job was naming your methods and your functions so that you don't have to comment every single one. This is what this does. So that when you look at the name of the function, you know what it does. These are things that are very important. And these are really, really basic skills. Coming out of a bootcamp, really, what I would strongly suggest is finding a project and doing it. And actually, that was sort of like what I had tried doing. Like my situation is a little different in that during the bootcamp, I applied for a grant. And then after I got my job, I discovered that I had won the grant. And it was like, oh no. So it was a very stressful, like 2 to 3 months as my partner and I tried to figure out, okay, how are we going to do this? And that was the thing too, right? I'm more of a back-end developer and I know that. So working with a friend of mine who's a graphic designer, who's completely front-end on the same project, it really, you know, like she's explaining concepts to you and you're explaining concepts to her. And first of all, it gives you a realization of how much you've learned and how far you've already come. And second of all, when you're explaining stuff to other people in a functional way, it solidifies your own understanding of the code and what you're doing and why you're doing it. And that's the most important thing. So yeah, like get out there, find an idea and work on projects with other people. It's good practice. And when you're looking for a job, it's also, once you get it up there, once you've got a hosting on Heroku for free, it's something that you can point potential employers to look at.
So would you recommend going to a bootcamp to people considering it?
Yes, definitely.
Yes. It's definitely a yes, but do prepare for it.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming back. It's great to hear how successful you're doing. Sounds like you both have great jobs. Went through a wonderful transition from not being developers to being developers. and hopefully we'll have you back on in another year or a couple of years and see where you are with your, you know, maybe some of the open source projects or languages that you've developed yourselves.
Looking forward to it. Cool.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Vancouver Tech Podcast.
Check out our website, vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
Rate and subscribe on iTunes. Much appreciated.
You can follow us on Twitter, VanTechPodcast.
Feel free to leave some comments below.
You can also hit us up on the YVR Dev, the Vancouver Tech, the VanTech Slacks. I'm at James.
And I'm at Drew. Special thanks to Same Room for hooking us up with an integration that allows us to have a cross-team Slack channel, VanDevs.
Do you have a meetup that you want us to plug? Email us show@vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
music by A Shell in the Pit from the game Parkitect. See you at one of the meetups around town.